Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is co-host Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Have a little issue I'd like to talk about today, and that has to do with Syria and sanctions and a few things like that. I think we've talked about before,
yeah.
But we heard the announcement, more sanctions on Syrians. They're the bad people in the world, and besides their allies with Russia, and you know, the policy has changed dramatically since then. There's 271 positions that our government took and put sanctions on individuals who could be business people or scientists or whatever for some concocted reason. But they literally, freeze funds. So if you're in a country like this, and all of a sudden nobody proves anything, and they loosely associate you with a policy, and another government comes in and freezes your money, you may or may not ever get back again. To me, it verges on theft. I mean, somebody's taking their livelihood. Who knows what it? But nobody questions it. It's just sanctions, and that's part of it. And this has been going on. But you know, one thing that is very dramatic is the change in policy. You know, the first gassing, supposedly gassing, the claim was in April 4th. And, of course, Assad was, said to have done this. But they never found any guilt, never proof of anybody that he did this. And yet that's all that is recited in the media. It's like he's absolutely guilty he did it. But then we had Trump, who was in campaign up until April 4th, he was saying, hey, what's the big deal? Why do we have to get rid of Assad? Then there was the gassing, and all of a sudden, a dramatic change in policy, just like a light switch. And quite frankly, I don't think the theoretical explanation that there was gassing by Assad, because I think it's an absolute lie. And yet, Trump said, oh, look, they've gassed him. We have to change our policy, and dramatic change, and now they're anti-Assad. Assad has to go, and Russia, more sanctions on Russia, and we're going to have put more demands on Russia. So something is going on. What do you suspect? Do you think there's a little influence? Do you think the neocons have total control of our foreign policy now?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a more stark rush to rush to judgment and turn of U.S. position on a country, I think, in history. As you point out, it's within a couple of weeks, we went from, it's not a priority to get rid of Assad, to Assad must go and we're going to bomb him to make him go. So why was the rush to judgment? And I think the big question is, who pushed this narrative on to Trump? Who told him, look, we got it. This is a slam dunk. We know he did it. The report that came out that the White House issued was not an intelligence community report. It was not produced by the Director of National Intelligence. It was written by H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, which is slightly, I think, more of a political position than the DNI would be. So the question is, what kind of a hand did McMaster have in it? And what was he trying to, the narrative was he trying to push? We know that just days before, when he said Assad can stay, the neocons went nuts. And the rebels went nuts. How dare you? We've been fighting so long for this overthrow. So what happened in the meantime, I think, is a real question.
Yeah, and it looks like there's some evidence that we're getting verbal support from some well-known neocons. Say, hey, maybe Trump is not all that bad. You know, even Graham and McCain have said, maybe he's our guy.
Yeah, Graham said, I'm the happiest dude in America.
Oh, boy.
But I've got a picture that I don't want to scare you, but I do want to show you the first picture that we have for today. Why Paul Wolfowitz is optimistic about Trump. This is a big article yesterday in Politico, and it talks about how thrilled he is about Trump's emerging Middle East policy. This is the guy, as you know, who was part of the lie machine that brought us to war with Iraq. No shame. He should be hiding in a corner or in a cave somewhere. But here he is, come out from under a rock to advise the administration.
And, when you look back on that, a lot of lies were told why we had to go to war, the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had. We had to go in there. And and there's nobody believes that anymore. And death and destruction, and we're still struggling to undo what we have done in Iraq, because we've turned Iraq over to the Iranians. They're the allies now, and they're more or less in charge. But he was the master at lying and getting us into the war. So maybe he's just there now. But why is he credible is the question you're really asking. You know, he doesn't deserve any credibility, yet they put it on the news, you know, as if, well,
another expert.
Good advice, yeah. Good advice coming back.
Well, here's a little clip from the article, and our good friend Bob Wenzel had it up on his site yesterday. Just a little bit of text, and it's not easy to read, but this is where Wolfowitz says, never apologized for advocating the Iraq War, although he said he would have done it differently if he'd been the one in charge. But the bottom part that Bob highlighted is interesting. He's privately emailing with Defense Secretary Mattis, National Security Advisor McMaster. Now, we don't know how deep that relationship goes, but they did work closely together in the Bush White House. Is it sort of a one-sided email? You know, hey, HR, let's go bomb something. Or is there a give and take? What kind of influence does he have? I think this is a real revelation to answer your question. Are the neocons taking back control? I think the pendulum is swinging in that direction.
And you know, and they give these episodes of this gassing that never probably has happened, you know, as a reason that we have to change policy and we have to do this. And the way I see it, they're just excuses. I think the policies are designed. It's just a matter of getting everybody speaking from the same page there. And finally, it looks like they have the president, you know, succumbing to all the pressures put on. But it has to be disappointing to a lot of people. It's so disappointing to us, because it looked like some sensibility would come out of this and we'd get a better policy. But I think the ballgame is over when it comes to having any discourse with them. You know, Tillerson was somebody that had worked with the Russians, and yet he's the one that says these sanctions are going to stay on Russia as long as Russia holds Crimea, you know, forever, as if they're going to, you know, give up that land that was part of Russia. You know, we know that whole story. It's all based on a bunch of fiction. I keep thinking that, that's like threatening the United States. Well, we're not even going to talk to you until you give up Guantanamo. But that might not be exactly the same, but the American people would respond in a similar manner. What do you mean? That's our base, you know.
Okay. Give back Texas or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing about this. You know, Trump certainly appealed to emotions on that after the April 4th attack, which, by the way, you know, there's only one eyewitness of the bombing. It was a 14-year-old girl who said when the bomb dropped, she saw a mushroom cloud come up, which case it couldn't have been sarin, which is colorless and odorless. But he played on the heartstrings, these beautiful children that he saw hurt and everything. But just a few days afterward, near Aleppo, one of the most despicable events I think in history happened. They lured children who were trying, who were putting on a refugee to get out of the area that was controlled by Al Qaeda. They lured them to a truck with potato chips and things that they hadn't had forever. And when the kids got up to the truck, they blew it up. 80 children slaughtered in the most despicable, horrible way, 126 completely dead. This is done at the hands of the rebels that we've backed. They're the ones that did it. The U.S. media is completely silent about it. Just yesterday, we were bombing in Syria. We bombed a family of eight. They were trying to flee the battle zone in their car, get away. Eight people, including six kids under the age of 15. They're also beautiful children, but the media doesn't touch
it
that.
It doesn't cover it, but there's nobody elicit. This doesn't elicit sympathy for them at all, because they're non-people. You know, that's way over there, and it's the bad guys that put them in harm's way. So it has nothing to do with the fact that we're dropping the bombs. You know, Phil Giraldi had a recent article, a good summary of this, and you made some of the points that he has made. But he has done an excellent article that's well worth reading for our viewers. But I think he cited, and others have cited, two individuals that deserve a little bit of credit. And it's not like you know, that they're just talking off the top of their heads. And that one is Stephen Cohen from Princeton.
Yes.
And he has a reputation, and it's not like he's yelling and shouting and demagoguing, but he presents his case for why he doesn't believe any of this stuff about Assad gassing his own people. It makes no sense. And there's no evidence, neither the first time nor this second time. Same way with Theodore Postel from MIT. He has a pretty good resume, too. You know, he has credibility, and he said this can't happen. It didn't happen, and yet, you know, in 10 years from now, at the rate we're going, unless all of a sudden we get a lot more viewers, you know, in 10 years from now, they say, oh, yeah, it was all fake. It was just like Iraq. I don't know why the American people went along with this. Saddam Hussein didn't have weapons of mass destruction. The killing and the disaster and the cause was just horrible. We shouldn't have done it, and yet... here we are repeating it. At the same time, you know, it's a confrontation with Russia, confrontation with Assad, Iraq a mess, Afghanistan a mess, sending in more troops. And who knows, it's tomorrow that the president's going to have some type of a special meeting with all the senators. And what do you think is going to happen? You know, this all kinds of speculation. The one thing I don't think is going to happen, that's easier to pick. He is not going to come to the American people and say, you know what, I've been listening to those groups, although they are a minority now, that believe that we ought to obey the Constitution, that we should never go to war without a declaration and get support from the people and then a vote by the Congress. Therefore, I'm asking you to vote for a declaration of war. I don't believe that's going to happen, but it'll be interesting to see. A lot of people will be listening closely tomorrow. Even if it's a secret meeting with the senators, it takes about 5 minutes, you know, for all the information to come out. So, and probably maybe an hour or two before he speaks, we may hear what he's going to be talking about.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating to hear what he has to say about North Korea. But, you know, the thing about the White House report, you know, first of all, again, it was not an intelligence community report. But the logic, I think, is so faulty. It says Assad had to have done it because the rebels did not have the capacity to do a chemical attack, which is simply factually untrue. They've done plenty of attacks, including actually less than a week ago after this one attack. They did a chemical attack in Mosul, ISIS did, where apparently some U.S. service members were injured in this chemical attack. So they've done plenty of these chemical attacks. So the whole logic that they couldn't have done it because they didn't know how to do it is completely faulty. You know, so the other point I was going to make, sorry, is that the U.S. and its allies have also blocked the OPCW, the U.N. authority to investigate things. They've blocked them from going to where the attack took place and actually trying to collect some evidence, which is also a head-scratcher.
Now, the one report, and I think Phil mentioned it, was that actually the Russians were involved, but in a very innocent way. They're over there. Guess what? They're fighting rebels in the Al-Qaeda. And, you know, they're on the side of so-called good. They were doing something that we pretend we're doing, and yet we don't like them to kill the rebels because we want the rebels to kill Assad. So the Russians, I think they have suggested this. I don't even know if they'd argue with what Phil said, that a Russian plane took off, and they warned the United States, we're going over here, you know, and they have this agreement, we'd warn each other, we're going over, and we're going to bomb this weapons depot and let them know. And it turns out that it looks like some gases could be released, but as the evidence comes about by some of these experts, it couldn't have been sarin gas. You know, it could have been some type of gas but we're not even positive about the reports on how many people got sick. And, you know, all the tragedies. But one thing is the pictures they showed didn't show evidence that somebody had just been poisoned with sarin gas.
Yeah,
That isn't likely.
The other thing that people don't realize is that our sole source of information about this comes from Al-Qaeda. They're the ones that control this area. So we're expected to take Al-Qaeda's word for it. There have been no Western investigators that have gone in there. So everything we know about this attack is what we've gotten from Al-Qaeda. So I think most Americans would say that seems pretty suspicious.
But they say there were some gases there, and they exploded, and they did some harm, which we don't know for sure. Then they still come up we have to do this because Assad is gassing his own people. You know, it is so crazy that if there were gases there, they were held by the rebels. Maybe they had them before Assad tried to clean them up, you know, and save an invasion of his country and, you know, come to a little bit of sanity and start some peace negotiation. So that may well be it, you know, that the gases were there or put there by allies. There are some people who would love to see a false flag.
Yeah.
You know, if they could see this and say, well, a plane came over, it was a Syrian airplane, they dropped it, poison gases. We have these pictures that we can run up, and they're capable of doing this. We witnessed all that war propaganda, you know, while I was in office, you know, on how they were stirring up the hatred and the fear. And, you know, Scott Ritter, who was another person that was involved back then, he's come out just recently, and he said this is not, you know, an episode of Assad releasing poison gas on his own people. He just thinks that's all fake.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of the things that Phil wrote about in this piece, I think it was the previous one, and I think it's very important maybe even to close on, is the idea that we need some whistleblowers there. He said there are people in the intelligence community that know what happened. They know that the narrative the White House is putting out is incorrect. It would be very helpful for them to come forward, share with the American people the truth about what happened.
That would be good, but unfortunately today a whistleblower is a bad word, because a whistleblower is actually somebody that's telling us the truth, but in an age of an empire they're considered to be treasonous, and that is very unfortunate. And right now it looks like we're going to continue with this fight. The propagandists are in charge, and it's a real tragedy, because it's difficult to get the truth out. It's difficult to even understand the motivations. Even if what we say is totally true, it doesn't explain the exact motivations, because they seem to be so bizarre to us for people to do these things, and how they work so hard to bring about war and killing and then blaming. And some people explain it by the military-industrial complex, building gas and oil pipelines, and a lot of other things, religious resentments and religious wars. And maybe it's a little bit of all that. The one thing is, it's a mess. And the one other thing that we ought to remember to reduce the damage and the injury to America's citizens and American liberties is just stay out of these fights. There's no threat to our national security from anybody in the Middle East, and we ought to just mind our own business and bring our troops home and try to promote peace, not to behind the scenes pretend we're for peace and provoke war. And that to me is the real serious problem. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.